Okay, let's not worry about these questions. Let's talk about something else. I mean, what a podcast for, other than just...
Welcome to Chaguna, a fortnightly podcast brought to you by two pairs of sisters who also happen to be mothers and daughters, aunts and nieces to one another. We invite you to listen in and join the conversation as we learn about each other and the world around us.
Yes. Tell me what's going on at work.
Working from home for now several months after the second wave. So a lot of floods and landslides happening. The peak of the monsoon. And this year the monsoon started with a bang, with lots of floods. The Melamchi entire settlements got washed away. Probably those that were closer to the riverbank. Even our cousin Raju's house and his brother Sagar's hotel got all inundated and destroyed by the floods and the materials that flow that came down from Melamchi. I visited Melamchi several times up there during the time when I was doing work for the water supply project. And now that the water supply project has just started, big outflow happened. There's been a lot of different people who've been affected. Since the time that I had started, that was 20 years ago to now, a lot of development along the valley, along the riverbanks took place. Many fish farms, trout fish farm up. There were 11 fish farms along the Melamchi. All of them got washed out. One. And just today, actually, today, as I was waking up in the morning when I looked at my Facebook, I could someone posting about a bridge that is across the Chenote going up to Kule. That's another place upstream of Melamchi. That was the only bridge that was left that had not been swept away by the floods of June. And today, unfortunately, that bridge. So now the upstream areas are completely disconnected and from the downstream areas. And life has become really difficult. There are some efforts going on in them, bringing their livelihoods back. But again, like I was hearing from that video, the washing away of the bridge itself has caused them to go like 15, 20 years back rather than forward in terms of time. All the development that occurred, everything that happened the last 10, 15 years has been just gone into the Melamchi, buried in the Melamchi settlement in the bazaar. There's at least 15 meters, so that's like 30, 40, 50 sediments that have accumulated. So I was there, I visited that just recently.
I know. A month ago. I saw the pictures on Facebook. This seems like an uncommon phenomenon. Is it normal that a regular monsoon flood would do this? Or is this because of climate change? What's going on? Why has this happened right now?
Yeah, one thing is you said the regular monsoon floods. But when you did the regular monsoon floods, even the regular monsoon floods have now started to become more extreme. Definitely climate change has to contribute. With the warming, things are changing faster in the upstream areas, like for instance, Melamchi in the headwaters, that's about 5,000 plus meters. There's a lot of, snow and glaciers there, and that has been affected. There has been a lot of rain just before the monsoon, as also just during that event. There was some rain causing, the snow to melt faster, and also the lakes that have formed up, and those lakes have also burst. So for this particular one, for Melamchi, the lake burst. So because of that, it brought down a lot of fine silt and materials, glacial till. Then there was landslides. We call it now cascading events. So it's not only a flood that has happened because of intense rainfall. It's not only because that there was a landslide and a landslide dam formed and that caused a flood to happen. It's not only because there has been a glacial lake outburst. So there has been a glacial lake outburst flood, which has resulted also in the scouring and erosion. Then there were some landslides and landslide debris that was there along the river. That has washed away. More landslides happened. So that was another effect that added on. Then also rainfall. So a number of different cumulative impacts. So this is not a normal event. I would not call it a normal monsoon. It is an event that has are being caused by a number of other events, including the glacial lake outburst. So the, why did the glacial lake breach at this time? Well, like I said, temperatures are increasing more in the higher altitudes. And also there's been a lot of snow and rain in the upper catchments also, which has caused the snow to melt faster. And thus, you know, and then also some impacts of the 2015 earthquake, because that earthquake has created some amount of instability of our terrain. So this it was already being loose, and with intense rainfall and more events happening, so that got loosened more, and that also, so there's so many different factors that contributed to it. So it's not just a normal monsoon.
What are other parts of Nepal where things like this could potentially happen? Was it just isolated there, or are there other places where things like that are happening?
Well, this is not an isolated event. In fact, in the beginning of June, when it started to happen, you know, normally there is a group called the SASCOF, South Asia Climate Outlook Forum. It's made out of representatives from all 8 countries of South Asia. So they come together at the beginning of April and come up with some kind of prediction, a forecast of what the monsoon is going to be like. So this year, their forecast was that the monsoon over much of Nepal was going to be above normal. So there's going to be more rainfall. So that itself was already a warning signal for us. And so that was one. But when you say, was this an isolated event? It was not, because more such similar kind of rainfall happening in higher altitudes also, you know, in Monang, for instance, where you normally don't have a lot of floods. Normally it's kind of dry up there, but this year there has been a lot of floods in Monang, and a lot of infrastructure has been washed away in the higher elevation. This was
That's weird, right? Because isn't Monang considered like in the rain shadow?
Yeah, exactly. It's considered rain shadow, but no, things have changed. So that's why the pattern of monsoon rainfall is also much of the region, and so also in higher altitude.
Would you say that there is anything positive, if it is truly climate change and we're going to see this sort of change in pattern, communities are going to suffer and there's going to be even more instability and infrastructure is going to be destroyed and that kind of stuff. What's the positive? Is there any positive whatsoever?
Anything helps both sides of the coin. So normally you're looking at more warming and also more rainfall. So in higher elevations, like for instance, I give you an example of Chumsum area, around that area where people never used to grow vegetables, for instance, cauliflower or cabbage or things like that. Never used to. They used to all bring it all the way from down from Pokhara, Myagdi, and come to Chumsum and Leyte. But now they're growing there. Now, how come that has been possible? Well, it's because it's getting a bit warmer and climate is changing slowly. So with that, that is that they're seeing more opportunities for such kind of agriculture farming. In fact, this year also in Kali Gandaki, in the Chumsum area and higher up, there was a big flood that happened more like there also. So a number of things. And in fact, if you talk about it, also in the Pamakoshi, there was a big landslide that occurred that threatened the Pamakoshi Hydro Park project.
Wow.
So there's small amounts of opportunity, small amounts, the positive aspects that could be brought about by the warming, the climate. There could be also a little bit more amount of flow for the short term for, say, hydropower production. That could be a possibility. But over the longer term, of this going to deplete, but over the some of the possible benefits.
Yeah.
But along
the
time, a lot of disaster, a lot of damage.
Yeah, and I think that so ultimately then they will have, like, I mean, after all these glacial bursts and, you know, all these glaciers melting, ultimately then what will be like Manga Parbat? What happens when all the entire Himalaya is a Manga Parbat? You know what I mean? What then?
Yeah, that's a scary thought, Muna. And that's what, like, it has done an assessment called the IMAP, the Indo Kush Himalayan assessment, to come up with that report about 2 years back.
And really, what does it mean?
Yeah, so we have different chapters there, which provides the current situation of what the poverty is, what the climate change impacts are, what climate change looks like, what are the disasters. In fact, I was one of the co-authors or co-lead of the disaster chapter. According to the one on climate change, we are looking at temperature and precipitation. And now when you're looking at it, you know, there are different scenarios that we consider. I mean, you're probably familiar with the Paris Agreement. According to the Paris Agreement, there is this business as usual and the different scenarios, 4.5, 8.5 scenarios. But apart from that, in the Paris Agreement, you know, countries have promised to keep the temperature well within 2 degrees centigrade or 1.5 degrees centigrade. So if we keep the temperature well within 1.5 degrees of the industrial period, then we will have the amount of snow that is left. That would be about 66 by the end of the century, you know, one third would be gone, actually. Let me.
Two thirds would be left.
Yeah, but for the other scenario, 2 degrees, the worst scenario, then you know, two thirds are gone. So it's a scary scenario, you know. So when I'm looking at Machu Picchu, when there's no snowfall, it looks like a black. Yeah, rock.
I know we never used to see, remember Himalaya? I mean, like, I can't remember ever seeing the Himalayas anything but white. But whereas here in Oregon, when during the summer, Mount Hood is entirely bare nowadays. You can see, like, really most of it is gray, dark gray, because there's no snowpack left, you know? And that's the thing, because of the drought here during the summers, even though when there's a very, very heavy snow in the winter, it doesn't have the chance to accumulate like you need to turn into a glacier or whatever. I mean, and that's just one little tiny mountain, you know, the tiny hill practically, right? Because it's like only 11,000, 12,000 feet. I mean, it's just unbelievable, unimaginable if that were to happen in the Himalayas. And what would that mean really ultimately? I don't know. Although, first of all that water will have gone somewhere. So those oceans are rising, but then it's also flow is taking with it all the soil and desertification. What happens? What happens when everything turns into Nanga Parbat? I don't know. What happens to that area, you know?
Yeah, you have the right words there, when desertification, impact on our ecosystem, health, all of that, part of the whole, you know. It's a scary, scary thought.
I know, eh? And then all this stuff is pretty frightening. I hope it changes. I hope we'll be able to do things differently. Just so, hope so. What do you guys think, huh, young people, about your futures? Because we're going to be gone soon enough.
That we need to control our consumption and live more sustainably.
To change our habits. Consumerism should reduce or come to an end.
Well, it's going to be highly unlikely that it'll come to an end, but certainly maybe there's a chance of doing things a little bit differently.
Have you seen the Netflix series called Marie Kondo?
Marie Kondo, yeah. I have seen it.
Yeah, it's like hard. Does it spark joy? Mm-hmm. Everything sparks joy.
Yeah, exactly. Everything sparks joy. People are so attached to their things, you know, especially like fast fashion and stuff. I don't know. It'll be interesting. You know, there's a big push for localization, local kind of farming and things like that. A move to live more sustainably. But it's hard to do, make that shift, you know, when we're living in such a global context.
That's supposed to be my project in Caltech, by the way.
Really? What? Tell us more.
Changing consumer perception, understanding people's behavior regarding climate change and sustainability.
Oh, really? How exciting. Good. I'm so excited to hear that. It'll be good. We need to tackle those big issues. So how are you going to do your research, Junie? Tell us a little bit about that.
That's going to be another episode altogether.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. But I'll keep you posted.
You mean you don't want to reveal your secrets right now so that your professional competitors might grab your ideas?